Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
I'm still John Steinbacher.
Still John Steinbacher.
Still and always.
Well, it's great to be back with you after a couple of busy weeks in sports.
So busy.
Yes. Early on in that period, U.S. Open tennis was certainly at the top of Lisa's agenda, and some pretty good matches to talk about here.
Sure. It just ended on Sunday, and it feels like it was a month ago.
Yeah.
I feel that way about the eclipse. That was not even a month ago, and it feels like it was last year.
The world moves fast.
It sure is moving fast. Here's what I want to say about U.S. Open tennis. Feel free to jump in. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of it you guys...
I watched a lot of it.
You watch a lot. I actually watched more this year than I have in quite a while. My observations, there's a lot of young talent on both the men's and the women's side. What I thought was interesting was that the men's final had two guys over 30 playing in the final with totally different experience. You know, mm-hmm. one guy is like one of the... He's going to go down in history as one of the best people ever to play the game. And the other guy is just like, well, this is my first... You know,
but he's
final.
An Illini. He might be the best Illinois tennis player ever.
That's right. And so that was kind of cool. Whereas the women's side had two young women of color in their 20s facing each other. And sort of it did feel very much like a torch was sort of being passed because in the semifinal matches, it was Venus Williams, Madison Keys, and Sloane Stephens. And Coco Vandeweghe, who basically was invisible. You could barely even tell she was there. Venus is 36 years old. There's been some speculation as to whether she'll continue after this season. So it was really great to see these two young women like duke it out. And it was pretty great. And I very much got the feeling, I don't know about you guys, that Sloane Stephens is like, that was like her big coming out. Like
yeah.
she's going to be a very tough person to beat. Even if Serena comes back, which she might not. I mean, she just had a baby. That also happened since the last podcast. She had her baby. I think Sloane Stephens has got some confidence now. She was really funny in the post game. I really see tennis changing because of some of the stuff that happened this year. I think, we like to talk about sports traditions, and tennis is a very traditional sport. It's very married to things being a certain way, and I see that changing, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, very cool. And as John mentioned, former Illini Kevin Anderson made it all the way to the final. He's 31 years old. He's just been kind of like gradually working his way mm-hmm. up the ranks. And I think he'd been to the semifinals before once or twice in a Grand Slam, but this was his first final. He's a really big guy.
That's he is a really big guy. The interesting thing during this tournament is that he seemed to be moving around pretty well. It seems mm-hmm. like he's gotten older, his game has expanded quite a bit. But, you know, Nadal was on, so he really didn't have much
of
a chance.
Well, you know, it's funny watching him. So Nadal struggled a little bit early. You never really thought, oh, God, he's going to lose. But when you're in a tournament that's 2 weeks long and you're playing lots of matches and you're in the age he's at and you've had injuries, it's just sort of like, ugh. But after he got through the very early rounds, every time I watched him play, he really drove the pace of every match that he played. He even has like a much shorter toss on his serve than he used to. It's just like he wants the game. Once he's in the zone, he just wants it to be over. He's super intense. I just felt like, all of his matches were over so early or, you know, so soon. And I felt like Anderson played really well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a total smoking or drubbing, but mm-hmm. Nadal was just in the zone. Like, really, for the second week of the tournament, he really was.
Yeah, it was just basically one break in each set, wasn't it? Is that kind of the way it went?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was like 6-3, 6-4, 6-4,
yep.
or something like that.
Exactly.
So, congratulations to Kevin Anderson for making
it
all the way to a Grand
Woo-hoo.
Slam final. Here this week, big news has been Jemele Hill with ESPN making some comments on social media about President Donald Trump and white supremacy and some of the reaction to those comments. I think as we stand today, I think Jemele has walked back a little bit of that anyway, given somewhat of an apology. The White House has called for her to be fired.
Which is a little strange. This White House, like, they've done a lot of really interesting things. But I just think it's just outrageous. It's not right. That's not their place to do that. And I think it's worth mentioning that she didn't say this stuff on the air.
No.
She didn't say this stuff on Twitter. It was on Twitter. And our president says all kinds of fun stuff on Twitter. I mean, you know, and I also feel like it's a bit of a double standard because there's plenty of white dudes who are famous who have said similar things to what she said who have not been asked to be, you know, the government has not called for their head. So I find that a little ridiculous on top of the ridiculousness. But, well, you know, she's always been pretty pointed, I think. I mean, you've never really doubted where Jamel stands a lot of things, everything from how terrible it is to run a 5K to the president, you know. And that's her space to do that. But I've never sensed that she was overly aggressive in her Twitter. And I didn't even find this aggressive. It's she is basically stating a very strong opinion backed up with facts. And, you know, she I think everybody kind of gets to a point where they're like, all right, you know, this other thing has happened, or who knows if something happened at work or something happened with an athlete somewhere that just made her want to lay it straight. And, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about the press secretary for the president of the United States putting pressure on her network to fire her because of something. I just, that doesn't sit, that doesn't, that just seems like an overreach, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I know I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable if, you know, the governor's office or somebody was calling on somebody at a station anywhere for that matter to be fired.
And so, of course, like,
wait, the governor's calling on
if you look at the responses to her walk back, like, it's just like, it's terrible. Like, you know, they say never read the comments, but I mean, of course you're going to read the comments, and it's just awful. I don't know. More, I mean, this just happened. We are talking on what, today's the 14th. This just happened yesterday, didn't it? Yeah. So it's like, I'm sure there's much more to come. But I really hope she gets to keep her job. I really like her. I like the way she talks about sports. I think she's incredibly intelligent and also funny as heck.
Mm-hmm.
So there, that's happening.
There we go.
Can we quickly talk about how bonkers this baseball season is?
This baseball season is pretty bonkers, John.
Fill me in. Wait, there's a winning streak. Someone's got a winning
streak.
Well,
at the beginning of the season, and we'll go through this quick, but at the beginning of the season, Houston was the best team in the league. They're going to be the best team ever. Then suddenly, they're not the best team ever. The Dodgers are the best team ever, and they're going to break all kinds of records. Then suddenly, the Dodgers lose like 16 of 17 games. They're still like have a 10-game lead. They're still in great shape. And suddenly the Indians have won 21 straight games, possibly 22. You know, we're on 21 by the time this is on the air. It'd be 22 or 23. The streak will be over. What the heck? Last year was just Cubs the whole time. What's going on, Brian?
Yeah, this is pretty nuts. You know, and Cleveland's doing it with like three of their best players are hurt right now too. That's the other thing that's a little bit crazy about this. Their second baseman Kipnis and a couple of other guys who I can't remember off the top of my head now, but they're without like three starting players while they're doing all this. They've caught Houston for the best record in the American League. The Dodgers almost got caught by Washington for the best record in the National League, but Nationals are not going to quite get there. But and then you got the NL Central, where the Cubs are just doing enough to stay in first place right now over St. Louis and Milwaukee. We'll see how that turns out.
So when do playoffs start to happen?
October.
Didn't the World Series used to happen in early October?
There's
now like four rounds of playoffs. So
right,
because
there's
be one
so many more teams, right?
Yeah. It used to be early October back when it was just the two leagues, and the league winner went to the World Series automatically.
Days. Tradition, man.
Tradition. So anyway, that's a little bit of what's happening in sports.
What's going on with Illini sports, Brian?
Well, with Illini sports, the fall season is well into its swing, and we'll catch up with one of the head coaches of Fighting Illini.
Swing, I see what you did there.
Yes, we'll catch up with one of the head coaches of Fighting Illini sports. Chris Thomas, the head volleyball coach of the University of Illinois, will join us. That's coming up next here on The Bandwagon. Illinois volleyball coach Chris Thomas is in his first season at the helm here at the university. The Illini are off to a 6-2 start. They're headed to a tournament in Springfield, Missouri this weekend. Chris Thomas joins us on the phone right now. How are you today, coach?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing very well. You're 8 matches now into your first season here at the University of Illinois. How do you think things are going so far?
You know, I think pretty good. I feel like the first two weekends we played very well against some quality opponents. And, you know, last weekend was a tough one to swallow in terms of results. But, you know, we lose 6 games by a combined 13 points. You know, I don't think there's such thing as a good loss, but it's promising in the direction we're heading. So I'm very pleased about it.
Hi, this is Lisa. So my question is more about maybe some what your job is like now versus what your job was like where you came from. Like, what kind of differences do you notice in the head coaching space as opposed to maybe not working as a head coach? Is it more intense? Do you find yourself preferring certain aspects over other aspects? How's that all coming together for you?
Well, I've had a bunch of friends who have been coaches, head coaches before me. A lot of them explain it like having a child. You don't really know what it's like till you have one. So, so I can attest to that. Just in terms of, you know, you go from just having your own little small maybe assignment. I was in charge of scouts at all previous locations that I've been at. I've handed that over to my assistant, Jason, and, you know, you just get pulled in lots of different ways. You know, this being one of the interviews, you know, taking care of all members of the team, compliance issues, you know, media, you know, being out in the public, stuff like that. So I think it's more just there's a lot different things you have to focus on and you have to be aware of. And it's not just about the volleyball. You know, that's obviously a huge portion of it, but it's also about taking care of everything else that goes with this role.
Right. So are you particularly comfortable in any particular space, though? Do you find yourself more drawn to a certain activity, or you wish you had more time to do it?
Sure. I have two young children, a three-year-old and an eight-month-old, so I try to spend as much time with them as I can. My wife is also my assistant, volunteer assistant, so she brings them to the office every now and then for lunch and stuff like that. So family is important for me, first and foremost. After that, you know, it's just kind of taking care of everything that needs to be taken care of for the job. I think the media thing is a big deal, especially in this area. Social media is also a big deal now with recruiting. And then just recruiting in general is a big deal. So I think, you know, start to spread myself out more towards those areas. And then, you know, to take care of everything else with the team is also important. So it's just a lot of time, but I enjoy doing it.
You're replacing in a lot of cases here at the University of Illinois, coaching replacements have come after someone got fired or left mm-hmm. for unsavory reasons. Mm-hmm. But you are actually replacing a very popular coach who left Kevin Hambley, who left to coach Stanford. And when he left, a lot of people sort of had the attitude, well, I understand that. That's, you know, pretty much the best sure. coaching position in volleyball. So what is that like for you? This is your first job. You're coming into a situation. You're replacing someone who took the program to heights it had never been. Do you feel pressure to live up to that? Are you sort of taking the program in what you consider to be a different direction? Are you sort of, well, it worked before. We're going to kind of try and build on what's happened?
Yeah, I think I don't think too much about, you know, I got to, you know, live up to some expectation. I mean, I put that own pressure on myself, and I think, you know, that's why I am where I am. I've done a lot of work in this game and I've taken a lot of time and effort to get to this spot. So the expectation for me in general is just to produce the most successful product as we can. You know, there's going to be some differences in style of play, and I think that was probably the biggest concern at the beginning, is if the team could kind of take hold of that. But you know, this comes with time and making sure we're really good with how we give feedback and everything else. And we just had a big alumni weekend. You know, a lot of successful teams through here, so I think the team saw that, and they have expectations too. You know, you're going to play in the Big Ten, and it's kind of what they sign up for. So we do have expectations, but in terms of, you know, what does success look like, that comes in many different forms. And I think so far we've been successful, and we look forward to continuing that here in the future.
Are you looking forward to not getting asked that question?
What's that?
I said, are you looking forward to the point, hopefully in the near future, where you don't have to answer that question?
No, it's fine. Everyone's going to replace someone at some point, so it's totally fine.
Sure. Chris, you mentioned, you know, having your wife, Jen, on the coaching staff. You know, of course, you met through the sport of volleyball. But what's it like, that dynamic, you know, having your spouse being on the coaching staff with you?
Sure. Well, I kind of mentioned before about just, you know, the amount of time that goes into this. You know, and it's great that I get to be with someone that I trust and that I love. And you know, she is very good at working with teams and working with people on teams. She's played at the highest level. She's a captain on the national team. She played on the national team for 10 years, played the Olympics in 2008. So, you know, her experience is really unmatched by a lot of people. So it's really nice to have her on staff. And then just from the personal side, like I mentioned, it's good that I get to see her every day. And, you know, I'm able to spend that time with her. We're very businesslike in practice, but, you know, there's little moments here and there where we get to talk with each other. And like I said, she brings the kids over, and we make it work pretty well. But we've been doing this for a little bit now, and we really enjoy working together.
I was going to ask, like, if you have designated no volleyball discussion nights or
no, we dates. We talk about volleyball all the time.
Hey, if it works for you, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So. I wanted to ask you about your student athletes. You know, you're working with this batch of student athletes for the first time. And I'm curious to know, outside of volleyball, what your perception is of what their hopes and dreams and plans for the future are. Like, you know, when you look at them as a group, and especially in comparison maybe with some of the coaching that you even did 5 years ago, what has the evolution been, especially like with the rise of social media and players becoming much more involved in their presence in that way, and looking toward their futures? You know, what can you say about your student athletes now? What are they like as a group?
Sure. I think, you know, the social media aspect or the age at which we recruit these players, which is usually eighth, ninth grade, a lot of them when they start that process. So they have there's a lot of build up here for, you know, when you come in, this is the expectation. And I think it's made the game better in respect that, yeah, they know they're going to Big Ten school, so they got to work hard that, you know, once they're in, you know, get to that commitment, so to speak. You know, the expectation, you know, sometimes could be, you know, hey, I want to play as a freshman. You know, a lot of people kind of get promised that. We don't make that promise. We said, hey, if you're good, you're going to play. But I think sometimes that's where it goes wrong a little bit. But I think overall the student athlete is, you know, they're very informed with all the social media out there. They're very passionate about the school they go to because they've known they've been wanted to go there for a while. And, you know, they work hard. So I think especially here in Illinois, you know, I see a lot of that in our girls, and they want to win as bad as anyone. And I appreciate working with them.
You have speaking of social media, you already have quickly achieved a reputation among Illini coaches as having a fun presence recently. I think your Twitter feed is fun, and I recall a picture of you with a cutout Lovie Smith recently.
Yes.
How much of that, certainly you talked about social media being important to recruiting, but how much of that is just your personality, wanting to have fun on the job? Obviously, you know, Big Ten volleyball school,
sure.
it's a serious job, sure. But also important to have fun. How is your approach to that?
Yeah, I think it's very much a reflection of myself. And you know, I've told a few people, it's not like I sit around the office all day trying to think, what am I going to tweet next? You know, it's very much in the moment. And it's a chance to have conversations with fans and you know, respond. And we have a good relationship with our Spike Squad, our student organization that comes to all of our matches. And, you know, as an example, we were going to go play sand volleyball here with the athletic department. So we just tweeted it out real quick, and Spike Squad's like, where is it? What time? We'll show up. And so it's just a chance to interact with fans like you said, show, you know, my side of things and what we're doing here and what my personality is like. So, you know, I do enjoy it. I don't sit around all day thinking about what I'm doing, but it is a very in the moment reflection of what we do here. So it's good for the fans. I think it's good for recruiting as well.
And Coach, you know, as an assistant at Nebraska, you got to see the Huff Hall gym completely packed as an opponent. You got to see that as the home coach here this past weekend when Stanford came into town. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was great. You know, I talked to some of my upperclassmen here this last weekend, and they said it's the most students they've seen at a match before. You know, we've had the student section was all the way up to the rafters. The football team came, softball team came, women's basketball team came. I mean, everyone was there. So it was really cool experience to be on the home side, and I'm glad I was the one or we are the ones that were on that side, because I have been here for Illinois night for some other events. So we're going to actually look to enhance that portion of it as well, and we're very much in talks with our marketing department and our events department to enhance that as best as possible.
You know, we mentioned you're off to a 6-2 start this season. What are your goals here for this season?
You know, the goal is to kind of take it one match at a time, and we have never looked past an opponent. You can kind of talk about that. You know, I think our girls did a great job of not looking ahead. You know, before we started, you know, there was a bunch of talk about Stanford, obviously, and Steph Huff and these other events, but their goal at the beginning of season was to beat Gonzaga, which was our first match. And then ever since then, it's just been, hey, one to the next to the next. And, you know, I think if we take care of business on our side, it gives us a good chance to win. I tell the team I can never guarantee you guys wins, but if you keep doing the things we're asking you to do, we'll put ourselves in the best position to do so. And, you know, I think we saw that last weekend against two very good quality opponents, and you know, we just kind of look for to be in those positions so we have a chance to win matches at the end there. So it's good. It was a good learning lesson, but the girls are hungry for more, and we had a good week of practice. So expectations, just continue what we're doing and fight hard and do our best.
So, Lisa, one last question here that has nothing to do whatsoever with volleyball.
Okay.
Since you're relatively new to town and you probably left behind a lot of things, restaurants, events, stores, whatever, topography, cornfields, I don't know, things that you loved back in Nebraska, what have you found here that you're really starting to enjoy about the area? What gives you some energy outside of volleyball that you've
sure.
discovered here?
Well, when I came here, when I got interviewed, everyone asked me why Illinois, and, you know, to be honest, I didn't know much except for Huff Hall and I Hotel. Those are the two things, because that's where we stayed as the visiting team. And so I appreciated everything that went on in Huff. You know, we always sat around in Nebraska and say, how do you get a student section like Illinois does? And the answer is you can't, because, you know, that base is built into the university, you know, from Block I to Orange Crush, Spike Squad. I know the other sports have their other student blocks, but it's very much involved and they're very organized. And, you know, I enjoy that part of it too. You know, just being on campus and you know, Green Street, and we have so many great things that happen right here within, you know, 5 minutes that are awesome. The downtown's great. The food scene's great. So there's lots of things that I've grown to like here. And, you know, and then the last thing is just the people. You know, Josh, our AD, talks all the time about we have the best people here, and we truly do. And, you know, the fans, I think, appreciate that too. So I enjoy being out in the public and talking with people about the team. You know, there's lots of passionate fans and just Illinois supporters. And, you know, people are great. Food's great. Can't complain. So.
Awesome.
All right. Chris Thomas, University of Illinois head volleyball coach. Coach, best of luck this weekend in Springfield, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Illini volleyball coach Chris Thomas for joining us here today. Now time for our newest regular segment on the show, Controversy. And one of the more controversial things here in the last few weeks has been the case of Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. Stemming back to an alleged domestic violence case when he was in college, there were never any criminal charges filed in that case, but NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell suspended Elliott for 6 games over that case based on the evidence that he saw. Elliott appealed that as suspension, and a federal judge put an injunction in place so that Elliott could play in the Cowboys' opening game against the New York Giants on Sunday, a game the Cowboys won by a score of 19-3. And now the NFL is trying to appeal that injunction. The NFL has quickly answered a filing from Elliott's attorneys this week, telling District Judge Amos Mazant that the league would immediately go to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans if he did not rule on its request for a stay of his injunction by Thursday. So long story short, it looks like he's probably going to play this Sunday against Denver. We'll see where it goes from there. But this has certainly been a case that has been controversial for a few reasons. Obviously, the NFL has had a lot of problems with domestic violence and the way that it's handled those cases in the last few years. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is you've got Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, who's basically judge, jury, and appeals court,
right,
all in one. And the Players Union, by the way, agreed to that in their last collective bargaining agreement. So lots of things to unpack here. I'm a full disclosure, I'm a Cowboys fan. I don't know how even how I feel about this whole thing. There's just so many different aspects to it where I can see, okay, yeah, from a criminal justice standpoint, from making sure a guy gets his day in court, that type of thing. Okay,
right.
I can see Ezekiel Elliott's side of this story for sure. I can also see the NFL's side on this particular case with domestic violence and all the problems the league has had and how it's handled domestic violence cases with its players. Obviously, that's a very serious issue as well. I still don't know how they have to feel about this whole thing.
And this case is old. I mean, it's a couple years old.
It goes back to when he was in college at Ohio State.
So, so that to me is also part of it. It's just like I sometimes think the constant, you know, I don't want to use a terrible metaphor, but this flogging of a dead horse, I'm sorry to say, or it's not dead, but just to keep it going. I think it exhausts people to talk about these things over and over again, which paranoid me thinks that's kind of the whole idea, is just be, you know, everybody gets tired of it and just lets him do his thing. So, yeah, he should have his day in court. He should be punished if that is the case. I feel like fans just want their team to win, so they kind of don't care what the person does. I mean, we talked a little bit about this before where, a woman's like, I hate what this player is doing, but then she's also, she just spent $100 on a jersey, maybe not for that player, but for that team, you know? So there's a lot of dualities, trialities, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
It's just,
like most controversies.
It's very complicated and is... The NFL, man, the way they handle things is gloriously incompetent.
Yeah, it really is. And then I think, Roger Goodell and his, I don't know, I'm probably going to get some flack for saying this. I don't get the impression he's that smart a guy.
Just
listening to him talk about things. There was something here not too distant past. We might have touched on this last episode even, where he was asked about Colin Kaepernick and Kaepernick not having a job in the NFL at the moment. And Goodell's answer was something along the lines of, well, I'm not a football expert.
Right.
Well, I would say he's either not very smart and the owners like that, and that's why he continues to have a job, or he's really smart and plays really dumb. And the owners like that, and that's why he continues to have a job. I would say it's one of those two. And either way, he takes all the flack away from the owners, and everyone blames him for everything. And they get to just, you know, have their billion-dollar stadiums and get the deals done and all that stuff. And
it does kind of make me wonder, you know, with some of the issues the NFL is having, how long, you know, the gravy train can go on for the league. I mean, this is a league that's been just raking in billions and billions and billions of dollars, especially here in the last 10 to 15 years. It's just seen exponential growth. Between cases like this with domestic violence, between all the issues with head injuries, concussions, long-term injuries to its players, how long can the NFL keep this going?
Well, maybe the NFL is just one giant controversy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, seriously, for every reason that you just mentioned and probably others, I mean, that's... I don't know. And there's the, you know, I'm with Cap hashtag campaign.
Yeah.
A lot of people boycotting NFL or not wanting to watch or go or whatever. And I'm not sure how much of an effect that's going to have, at least it's early days in the NFL season and in the campaign. But there's a lot of people, pretty influential people, who are sort of like, hey, I'm waiting for NBA season to start. That's what I'm waiting for. I mean, not me personally, but that's what they're saying.
And me, when I have a choice, I'm watching baseball. So
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
And kind of transitioning here from controversy right down to the social media thing, I was going to have my social media thing be these terribly empty, like the Los Angeles, Los Angeles now has two NFL teams.
Yeah.
And the Chargers are playing there, and the stadium, and the Rams are playing there, and the stadium is empty, and it's like
for all the for the games,
yeah,
like people just aren't going.
Yeah, I'll post pictures, but it's, and you know, our NFL would be argue, well, it's going to take some time, but this is a long term process, blah 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 blah. But if the fans were in LA were so hungry for these teams that there's two of them, and then nobody's showing up, it's It's very interesting. And with that, you know, I think I'm going to let you guys do your social media thing and probably just be very, very quiet because I want to defer to you.
Oh, John Steinbacher.
You're so funny.
You crack us up.
He's so funny.
Lisa, what do you have for social media today?
I have a couple things. One is an article I ran across yesterday. Somebody in my Twitter feed posted it. It is a piece called Colin Kaepernick Has a Job from Bleacher Report. It was written by a gentleman named Rembert Brown. Really good long-form bit of journalism. There might be... Just beware there is some sort of crazy autoplay when you open up the webpage. And if you're like me and your computer's on really loud by accident, it can be a little shocking and surprising. But it is a really good history of Colin Kaepernick and where he grew up and where he's from. And I realized there was a lot I did not know about him. But it's also a really good commentary on race in the NFL, race in sports, race in this country. Assumptions that are being made, white feelings. It's just really good, and I highly recommend it. It's long, but there's also lots of pictures to break things up if you need lots of pictures. The other thing that I wanted to talk about briefly is we were talking about U.S. Open tennis earlier, and Sloane Stephens, of course, won the U.S. Open on the women's side, and somebody decided to sort of flip the script a little bit. We've seen some headlines in the past where a famous guy's wife performs amazingly in the sports sphere. They never really give her name or in the headline or anything.
Right.
So somebody, let me find it here, said that the headline here, this was in Stars and Stripes FC, boyfriend of U.S. Open champion Sloane Stephens scores brace against San Jose. That would be Jozy Altidore.
Yeah.
He is a quite well-known American soccer player, spends time on the national team. He's played overseas, very talented guy in his own right. How often do we get to say that about a man? So I thought it was very clever that that somebody sort of flipped that script. It did make me LOL, actually. So that's, those are my social media discoveries.
For me, mine this week, one of my favorite sports writers is Joe Posnanski. He wrote for Sports Illustrated for quite a while before that for the Kansas City Star. Now he's writing for MLB.com. It's actually who he writes for full time, but he also blogs. And a couple things that he's doing this week that I just love. He and Michael Schur, known as Ken Tremendous on Twitter.
Yes, yes.
They do a podcast together. Huh. And one of the things they're doing with that is a tournament right now for the funnest Major League Baseball player, which last I checked, I think it was down to the quarterfinals. Cubs shortstop Javier Baez was one of the funnest players. Another one, and this is another thing I wanted to mention, another one of his funnest players is Rangers third baseman Adrian Beltre.
Okay.
And Joe put up a post on Monday of this week simply titled, A Dozen Adrian Beltre Gifts. And Adrian Beltre is just a unique guy. He has these quirky things that he does that just crack you up. One of them, the most well-known, is you do not touch him on his head. He hates to be touched on his head for any reason. He will chase you down if you touch him on his head. But anyway, Joe just picked out 12 gifts of Adrian Beltre doing Adrian Beltre things and made an article out of it. And
is one of them being touched on the head and running someone off? At least one?
The last one is, and of course, don't touch his head.
Oh my gosh.
And Beltre throws his glove at a guy who touches his head. So it's wonderful. We'll link to it as we do with all our social media stuff and everything we discuss on the show. And that will just about do it for us today. But first, we have credits.
Well, we sort of do. Hang on.
We sort of have credits.
Yeah.
There they are.
For a second.
Somewhere.
No.
Here we go. Page. There they are.
I'm ready now. Sorry. I always forget about this part. I intend to write new ones every week, and I just never do. So anyway, that's all three of us, even though, pro tip, John has left the building, actually. He's not being very quiet. Actually, we should talk about John right now, right? So, because he's not here to defend himself. Anyway, we do want to thank you for joining us on Bandwagon. Version 3.0. We're in our third season. This episode was produced by the three of us, Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, and John Steinbacher.
Bandwagon is supported by several of our friends and colleagues without whom we could not do this. Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, Automatic Empire wrote and performed our brand new theme music and some of the other music that you hear in the podcast. We can't do it without them, so thank you very much. You can find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, go figure, where we link to almost everything we discuss here on the podcast. That's the videos, the audio, the social media, like Brian said, and much more. Better yet, you can subscribe to Bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. That helps other people find us. We like to be found. Mm-hmm. Rather be found than lost. If you don't have iTunes, no big deal. You can find us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. Don't put any vowels in there. And you'll get our most recent thoughts on all things sports and culture and occasionally other topics. And we all have our own Twitter accounts, too. So you can follow us there as well if you really want to. We like your questions. We like your links. We like recommendations. So please call our attention to something if you feel like we should talk about it. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for another episode about these sometimes, nay, almost always, strange intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.